purist is only a box of tricks. I hardly think Centauri would hurt a fly, would you?
No, I think he's rather sweet. Or is he a she?
Neither. She's an it. It's a hermaphrodite hexapod.
Oh, say can you see in the blinkless electron gun eye of the mainstream media mirage that what we hail are the hallucinations of authority and progress and righteousness, whose sweet and stern voices have captivated and conditioned millions of human creatures, stimulated them in passive acceptance of technological disruption and destruction of our environments, of our histories, of the possibilities of alternative ways of being, whose seven stripes are broken swastikas, whose 50 stars are black holes sucking 200 million atomized existences into the daily routine of the human herd of hamsters, rolling the great wheels of the death machine, squeaking at the shocks and nibbling the cheese, and reciting and discussing and delighting in their mutually shared programming history, in their lives, and their cancers, their TV shows, their deaths, their jobs, their ignorance, their endless, pointless forward creeping, their glorious blind nosedive into their paycheck's pleasures, into an ecstatic emptiness, a glowing incinerator, a parking lot full of businessmen conspiring and colluding on the big dream, the big lie, the big nauseating, screaming, sweating nightmare of business America, media America, corporate America, consumer America, fascist America.
I am Katrina Rose. I'm an attorney, and I'm a transgender legal historian. I'm also someone who actually cares about whether or not transsexual and transgender rights continue to exist in 2006 and beyond. As such, I'd much rather be a trans flake than a trans fake. Yes, welcome to I'd Rather Be a Trans Flake Than a Trans Fake on the Trans FM Radio Network. Hosted by Katrina Rose. Definitely not brought to you by
Your Voice for Arizona Families, the Center for Arizona Policy.
For the past several years, proponents of same-sex marriage have loudly proclaimed that there is a clear trend moving towards same-sex marriage. But in reality, the opposite is true. There is a clear trend moving to protect and guard traditional marriage between one man and one woman. To date, 20 states have amended their state constitutions to protect marriage, with an average passage rate of 70%. This is an unheard-of trend by the people. And the New York court continued that trend by rejecting a lawsuit for gay marriage by saying that any change to marriage law must come by the legislature, and that only through the people's representatives will laws regarding marriage ever change. For the Center for Arizona Policy, this is Charlie Markle.
And now, move forward 9 whole days.
Good morning. Thanks for tuning in to Equally Speaking for Thursday, July 27th. I'm Sultan Shakir with your morning dose of GLBT news from the Human Rights Campaign.
And I'm Sarah Burney. Today's lead story is a disappointing marriage loss in Washington State. Same-sex couples and their families will continue to be denied equal rights and responsibilities under law following a decision by the Washington State Supreme Court yesterday. The cases were brought by the Northwest Women's Law Center, Lambda Legal, and the American Civil Liberties Union on behalf of 19 same-sex couples from across the state.
And after that decision from New York earlier in July, the entire gay marriage industry was looking wistfully towards Washington.
The fight now moves to the legislature, where already a state lawmaker says he will introduce a marriage equality bill.
National Public Radio reported on an interesting poll this morning that implies using GLBT people as wedge issues is backfiring. The poll looked only at voters in the top 50 competitive House districts that will decide control of the House. When asked what party would do a better job on the so-called values issues, including same-sex marriage, Democrats came out on top with 51% to Republicans' 37%.
Uh-huh. And how does that actually work when the election, the ballot at least, has an anti-gay marriage initiative or referendum on it? Hmm? However psychotic the anti-gay marriage-oids are, those percentages they talked about, I mean, those come straight from the vote. No, I don't believe that really represents the way people really feel. But the fascists, the religio-fascists, know how to whip up a fervor. And they know how to scare people. And a lot of people get scared. And it's been successful. This summer, New York fell. Washington fell. Neither of which really should have been a surprise for anybody who has actually been paying attention to the way in which the anti-gay marriage industry knows how to scare people, and also none of which should have been a surprise to anybody who sees just how fucked up the pro-gay marriage industry is. These are a bunch of fucking crack addicts. Or even worse, they are so addicted to what they're doing, they cannot see any aspect of reality. The minute the New York decision came down, really even before that, because this actually never should have been filed, there's actually one of these things, and I've talked about this before, there's one of these things in Iowa. Iowa! If it didn't succeed in New York, didn't succeed in Washington, and very likely isn't going to succeed in New Jersey, and the New Jersey, when it goes down, is going to probably take transsexual rights with it. Not only should the thing in Iowa never have been filed, it should be withdrawn. But you can't talk to an addict. And when an entire movement, collectively, is an addict, nothing is going to sway it. It's going to destroy everybody. Now, as the old saying goes, some people are more equal than others. And in terms of destruction, on one level, it's going to destroy everybody. But of course, one group of people are going to be fucked more than others. And it isn't going to be the overly rich, overpaid, underworked people who want gay marriage solely for their bank book. No? You know who it's going to be. What I'm about to play for you is, at this point, and this, I'm recording this early in August of 2006, this is almost a year and a half old now. What you're going to hear is some discourse that took place on the floor of the Minnesota House of Representatives back in March of 2005. It was over a proposal to put a ballot question on the November 2006 ballot in Minnesota for an anti-gay marriage amendment, and ultimately the thing failed, although it passed the House with sufficient votes to be put on the ballot. It died in the Senate. And for those of you, you know, anal retentive, you know, gay Republicans out there, remember, the only reason that thing is not on the ballot this coming November in Minnesota is because Democrats control the Senate in Minnesota. But of course, the anal retentive gay conservatives, transphobes, don't care about one of the the side issues. In other words, they probably don't really give a damn about who would be affected by what's about to be discussed. What you're going to hear is back and forth between the sponsor of the bill, representative, and I can't remember his first name, his last name is Severson, and surprise, surprise, he's a Republican. Although, granted, Minnesota, that's not as clear-cut of an issue as it is some other places. There are some good Republicans in Minnesota. I worked for one. But this guy, the guy who you're going to hear, isn't one of them. And it's going back and forth between him and a Democratic representative from Minneapolis named Phyllis Kahn. And try to cut her a little bit of slack with some of her terminology. You can obviously tell she means well, and she's done more research on this than a lot of people who attempt to talk about this. So, and she may have done this at the last minute, although she does say that she's done some research, you know, in the past. And she's probably quite flustered and pissed off at the way this debate was going, because, and I'll elaborate on something that won't be completely obvious from this one passage, which lasts about 10 minutes. Ordinarily, I like to cut in and refute things bit by bit, and I'll do that a little bit later, but I want to play the whole thing. This is where it runs about 10 minutes, and it's probably the longest stretch like this on the topic that I've seen in any legislative debate on a gay marriage amendment where the trans issue has actually come up. A couple of years ago in Texas, somebody tried to attach a pro-transsexual amendment to a gay marriage bill, and that, I think, was discussed for maybe 15 minutes or so, but that really wasn't about the main bill and how that would affect transsexuals. This is, so just bear in mind, this is from about a year and a half ago, on the floor of the House of Representatives, state of Minnesota, which, kind of think back historically, in 1993 was the first legislature in the nation to pass a gay rights law that did not discriminate against transgendered people. So, you know, fast forward 13 years.
Is there any further discussion? The member from Hennepin, Representative Kahn.
Mr. Speaker, Representative Severson yields to a question.
He yields. Representative Kahn.
Representative Severson, and this may also partially be directed at Representative Olson, you've tried to present this bill as a model of clarity, but there is problems with it. For example, the definition, the words that say only a union of one man and one woman. And so I would like to know, Representative Severson, my first question to you is, how do you define a man and how do you define a woman?
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and Representative Kahn, and you never cease to amaze me with some of your questions. But I guess I would I guess I'd have to say, if you don't know the answer, Representative Kahn, then maybe you'll tell me.
Representative Kahn.
Well, Representative Severson, it's not my bill. So I think you ought to have known how to answer that question before you brought the bill. But the basic issue, and I actually did spend fairly recently, I spent at a national scientific conference, I spent 3 hours at a meeting that was called Defining Male and Female, Biology and the Law, in the case of which I learned about the case of intersex people, which are not very rare, maybe rarer than you think, but it's estimated at 1 in 1,000 votes. And the definition of intersex refers to a series of medical conditions in which a child's genetic sex, their chromosomes, and their phenotype sex, the genital appearance, do not match. And again, this is estimated to be about 1 in 1,000. So there are probably about 5,000 such people in Minnesota. How are you defining man and woman? These people are different. They are different from the standard male or female. How are they affected by this? Do you define man to be the genetic makeup, or do you define it to be the physical phenotype?
Representative Severson, do you yield? Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and Representative Conlon. I guess I would say that it would be the anatomical, would be the determination of the man and the woman.
Representative Conlon.
Well, what do you do in the case of, for example, congenital adrenal hyperplasia, CAH, where there are hormones which are critical in sex differentiation, and the absence of the critical enzyme means that the XX fetus produces androgens, resulting in ambiguous external genitalia. So, do those ambiguous external genitalia, someone who has, for example, an oversized clitoris and fused labia, does that, for example, become a man by phenotype?
Are you asking me, Representative Conn?
Well,
thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative Conn, I guess I would refer to the birth certificate that the individual had when they were born as the determiner as to their sex.
Representative Conn.
Mr. Speaker, Representative Severson, again, one of the things that used to happen in early times, up to fairly recently, was that when such people were born, it was decided that you had to make a very quick decision. And in fact, the very quick decision was surgery of some kind. And the surgery, in fact, was usually to remove the male characteristics. I believe the doctor who was quoted says it's easier to dig a hole than to erect a pole. But what happened was that these people had deep psychological, difficult problems. And for example, that is now not the traditional thing to do. And so it is now not considered good medical practice to do this. So, I mean, I think one of the problems is that as we get more knowledge about life and we get knowledge about different kinds of life, we current medical protocol now calls for understanding that people are different. They're not wrong, but they're different. And what your bill intends to do is your bill is trying to say that no, there's only one concept of man and there's one concept of woman. And that disagrees with what medically we know, with what we know about people with Klinefelter syndrome, which are XXYs. Doesn't cover mosaic people who are XX and XY. All of these things are not covered by your bill. And, are the activist judges then going to determine who they are and who is male and who is female? Is that what you want your bill to do?
Representative Severson, did you want to respond?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and Representative Conn. Could you tell me how many people are fitting into that category?
Yes, the estimate is about 1 in 1,000. There are several other categories, too. Those are the genetic ones. There are several other categories of other physical syndromes. But that means, estimating about 5,000 in Minnesota, others, of course, throughout the world.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and Representative Conn. And I guess I would appreciate the fact that we as a body here legislate law for the good of society. We legislate on a large scale what we believe is going to be the good for the people of Minnesota as a whole. And we do not legislate based on individual cases or on exception. If we do, we are doing a huge disservice to the people that we represent. And so I would defend the wording in the Constitution that says union is marriage between one man and one woman, because that is the vast majority of the people in Minnesota.
Well,
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Speaker, Representative Stevenson, I think you've just emphasized what Representative Ellingson said. Constitutions are to protect the rights of minorities. Constitutions are not to trample on minorities, but particularly not to do it because of ignorance, because you think that what people look like are what sex they are, because of what their birth certificate says is what sex they are, even if that may make a mistake, and even if that mistake has been recognized in changes. I think, you know, the other thing besides the scientific fallacy of this issue, I've also had problems with the religious issue on this. I've gotten many emails which talk to me about it, many emails which say, for example, the Bible is God's word, not man's. All scripture is inspired by God and profitable for teaching, for correction, for training in righteousness. So, you know, I did turn to the Bible to see one of the things that the Bible said, that the Bible says about marriage and some of the things that the Bible tells us to do. I appreciate Representative Olson's telling us that marriage has always been defined as between one man and one woman. I would remind him of King Solomon, who was one of the people in the genealogy of Jesus Christ, who had 700 wives and many concubines. So marriage has not always been defined as one man and one woman. But we'll also look at what happens in Deuteronomy when we look at the laws of the Bible about what we did if a man happened to marry a woman and discover she was not a virgin. And then we said, and then the Bible says, and then shall bring out the damsel to the door of her father's house, and the men of her city shall stone her with stones that she die, because she has wrought folly in Israel, to play the whore in her father's house. So shall put evil away from among you. And if a man be found lying with a woman married to a husband, then they shall both of them die, both the man that lay with the woman and the woman. So shalt thou put away evil from Israel. This is was once the law of the land. This is once what people did. And I would say that your bill says that we should start to move back in that direction.
There are those out there who will say this is an example of why same-sex marriage is a trans issue. On one level, one can see why someone would say that. Problem is, that's resultant. It is because of shit like this that we are getting sucked down. And by because of this, I'm not chastising Representative Kahn. Quite the contrary. It's because the anti-same-sex oids are pulling a fast one. They are actively committing fraud. And how so? Well, you get a taste of it throughout this, but if you listen to this entire floor debate and go out onto the Minnesota legislature's website, nowadays they are putting audio and video, actually. So although the video file I found of this wasn't in very high resolution, you know, you get the audio. This thing lasts about 3 hours, and on a number of issues, this is really the only time that the trans issue came up, but on a number of questions, people ask this guy very, very direct questions about what this thing is going to affect. Now, whatever side of the same-sex marriage issue you're on, if you see a thing that says marriage is between a man and a woman, well, very obviously, that is going to outlaw plain Jane same-sex marriage. Gay man and a gay man, lesbian and a lesbian. Okay, that's out. But like Representative Khan is getting into, what's the definition of man and woman? Of course, there's also things like, does it affect domestic partnerships? Does it affect domestic violence statutes that apply to unmarried couples, etc., etc., etc.? Time and again throughout this debate, this clown was asked very direct questions about what the language would affect, what he intended it to affect. He refused to give any direct answers. Almost without fail, he would say shit like, well, that's up to the people. Let the people decide. In any other forum, if you are not given, if pertinent, critical information that would affect your decision about whether or not to enter into a transaction, if the other party deliberately refuses to give you information or masks it, or is just flat out lies to you about it, if it's deliberately withheld, that can be fraud. Now, granted, in your ordinary type of transaction, if somebody was being this evasive, you could freely choose not to enter into the transaction. The problem is, a court might ascribe what I just said to this thing once it's passed. How many people do you think should this thing have gotten onto the Minnesota ballot in November of this year? Or at any time? How many people in the Minnesota electorate do you think actually listened to this? Now, obviously, there's 134 members of the Minnesota House, so at least 134 people heard it. Number of other people there in the House chamber, presumably some people watched it live. Obviously, people with no lives, like myself, took a look at it on the internet. But let's get real. Let's get real. Out of an electorate of, say, a million or so people, I'd say less than 1,000 actually saw or heard this discourse. So what's going to happen when this gets into a court?
Let the people decide.
Okay, well, the people, whatever the hell that means, aren't sitting there presiding over real live cases. And a number of times during this debate, people really got in this guy's face. Well, you know, you're saying, you know, let the people decide. You're complaining about activist judges, allegedly activist judges. Allegedly, this is why you're putting the thing forward. Allegedly, you're not simply trying to get it on the ballot to damage Democratic electoral hopes. Allegedly. Allegedly, you don't want activist judges putting their feelings into the law, interpreting the law. But when you refuse, you actively, purposely refuse to give any indication about what critical definitions, critical potential meanings. And I freely admit, there are some potential permutations of this that are so minute that perhaps somebody proposing it genuinely might not have thought about it. We are talking about Minnesota. There has not been a trans marriage case go up to the Supreme Court, but I'm sure most of us have heard of Goins versus West Group, the big case brought under the Minnesota Human Rights Act, the Trans-Inclusive Minnesota Human Rights Act. This legislative body has a trans history. This type of question, if you don't remember Goins versus West Group, it involved the bathroom issue. And if you look at the court decision, if you look at the bullshit put forward by the defendant in that case, West Publishing, presumably, West basically would have you believe that everything would have been okay with Julie Goins' use of the bathroom if she had had SRS and actually had a vagina instead of a penis. Now, the reality is that would have been not the case. Because granted, I was not inside the building at West Publishing when the incidents occurred back in 1997, I believe it was. But I just have a feeling that when she was walking down the hall toward the ladies' room, she wasn't naked. Nobody saw what was under her skirt. So nobody would have seen if she'd actually had SRS. So it would have turned, West would have bitched just the same, and probably the result-oriented Minnesota Supreme Court of 2001 probably would have found a way to screw over the Minnesota Human Rights Act nevertheless. But that's a statute that came from this very body that is dealing with this issue right now. Thankfully, back in 1993, the Republicans were not in control of it. A number of Republicans who are incredibly opportunist actually voted for it then now, but now claim to be, you know, value-oriented and think it was a mistake. I won't mention the current governor of Minnesota by name, Tim Pawlenty, but he's not alone. But this legislative body has a trans history. This is, even if there are some ephemeral issues that maybe even a legitimate non-fraudmeister legislator could dodge and legitimately say, you know, I'm sorry, I actually haven't thought about that. Okay, this isn't one of them. Domestic partner benefits ain't one of them. Domestic violence statute shouldn't be one of them. This is fraud. This is actively attempting to perpetrate a fraud against the voting public. Because what's going to happen? Somebody's going to get into court with this. Either transsexual marriage, marriage involving an intersex person. And not only does the bare language of this thing not address who actually can qualify as a man or a woman, but you've got this history. And Minnesota isn't alone. Now, the first time I heard one of these ridiculous, you know, complete dodges, you know, I thought it might have just been incompetence. Because, let's face it, there are plenty of incompetent morons on the anti-gay marriage side. But I'm beginning to think a little bit differently. Now, I'm going to replay a small portion of the Minnesota thing, just the very beginning of it. And then I'm going to run right into something I play quite a bit, something that occurred in a neighboring state to Minnesota, namely South Dakota.
The words that say only a union of one man and one woman. And so I would like to know, Representative Stevenson, my first question to you is, how do you define a man and how do you define a woman?
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and Representative Kahn, and you never cease to amaze me with some of your questions. But I guess I would I guess I'd have to say if you don't know the answer, Representative Kahn, then maybe you'll tell me.
Further remarks on the Hargan's motion to amend. Does anybody wish to speak before Representative Hargan's speaks a second time? Hearing none, Representative Hargan's.
Mr. Speaker, I have a question for the sponsor of the bill that I think, you know, I don't know if this goes to there, if it goes to the whole, through the amendment or to the bill. I don't know where this scenario would take place. It's a modern world that we live in, and people do things that we don't understand. Say we have a couple, two men, one has a sex change operation. Does that then qualify them for marriage under this? Is it then a man and a woman?
Representative Krause, do you care to answer the question? And technically, we're within the scope of a motion to amend, so it's totally within your discretion, ma'am.
Sir, I don't think I'd like to answer that question. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Hargan's, any further remarks on the motion to amend?
Love power. I'm talking about love power. The power of a sweet flower is gonna rule the earth. And there'll be a great rebirth. Love is the flower that is mine. When I'm walking with my darling and we're holding hands, and life is fine, cause she understands. Walking down the sunny street, giving pretty flowers to the people that we meet. And I give a flower to the big fat cop. He takes his glove and he beats me up. I give a flower to the garbage man. He stuffs my girl in the garbage can. And I give it to the landlord when the rent comes round. He throws it in the toilet and he flush it down. It goes into the sewer with the yuck running through her. And it runs into the river that we drink. Hey, where you stink? Man, it's later than you think. Boy, you got just one more chance. Come on, baby, while I dance. Love, love power. I'm talking about love power. The power of a little flower. You don't think about no little flowers. Oh no, all you think about is guns. If everybody in the world today had a flower instead of a gun, there would be no wars. There would be one big smell in. Just a flower. Hey man. A flower. To my flower, man. Hurt it. Like everything else. Like everything else. No flower.
Yeah, I think Fraud Power might have been a better title, but oh well. I could parse that discourse between Phyllis Kahn and Representative Severson, you know, to death. You heard, hopefully, him going back and forth between anatomy and birth certificate. It's easy to conclude that he didn't know what the fuck he was talking about. I think there's more to it than that. Because you contrast this, or actually, you know, just put them together, this thing, the thing from South Dakota, where a sponsor of an anti-gay marriage thing there just blatantly refused to answer. And then this.
Yeah, I guess I'd have to say, if you don't know the answer, Representative Kahn, then maybe you'll tell me.
Yes, I am worried that this backlash to the greed of the overpaid, underworked, transphobic gay marriage industry. I am worried that the backlash, this type of backlash, will destroy transsexual rights. I'm equally worried that the masterminds behind this, at least as a threshold concern, don't care. And maybe actually want transsexuals to prevail over these. Why do I say that? I'm going to repeat this.
Yeah, I guess I'd have to say, if you don't know the answer, Representative Kahn, then maybe you'll tell me.
Presumably, Phyllis Kahn won't be on the Supreme Court when a trans marriage case gets up there, but I don't know. I don't know if she's an attorney or not, but somebody's going to be on the Minnesota Supreme Court. Somebody's going to have to make a decision. And because there is absolutely no guidance, they're going to have to come up with an answer. If they are not conservative judicial activists, they will rule in favor of transsexuals. If so, rest assured that the very next day, or maybe even before the close of business, on the day that the opinion comes out, these same people, these anti-gay marriage oids, are going to be gearing up for another one of these things to specifically destroy transsexual rights by constitutional amendment, which, of course, will require another ballot initiative or referendum or whatever process in a state.
Most of the people I've been talking to lately, lawyers,
it's just another excuse to get something else on the ballot come election time. Of course, in even numbered years, usually.
In case that we've been making for some time now, they did not break with the tradition
to cause the red meat to be in the water, to cause the radical fascist religionist, the Christianist,
what I noticed in
to
just
come out in droves,
in fact, your copy,
because they've been conned
they
into believing that somehow
that
all will be well,
limiting marriage to opposite sex couples,
all will be well,
procreation,
marriage is
essential to the survival of the human race, and I think that's at the crux of this whole
one
thing.
One thing
and
I
that's
haven't
really where we've been coming
heard
from as well. Obviously, we have religious beliefs, the evangelical
just put
community,
out real
and a biblical view of marriage and
in
so
all
on.
Of this.
But beyond that, the
is
fact that
somehow
they
trying
stay
to force somebody
to
answer this particular question,
well-being
and of course,
race.
Someone like Severson.
And that's
course,
basically what it comes down to, at least in the concluding words up top in this
find
review
some
this
proof.
Decision by
they
the
will
Supreme
claim
Supreme
they have
court
proof that gay marriage
in
destroys,
fact, because of
destroys society.
I think. Does that,
which of course
does that come
bullshit.
As a surprise to you at all? Is that what you thought it would come down to?
Find
it,
me.
It does. I'm
find
sorry
to me
say,
one.
I just felt
one.
That perhaps they would not uphold
American
because of the political
job
environment that we live in today.
That has been
but
saved.
New York surprised me as well. And
by
so
banning gay marriage.
I'm surprised at their
find me
their
one
ruling,
job that did
terribly
not
grateful and terribly pleased.
Get
so,
moved
along with,
from Middle America to Bangalore, India,
people across
as a result
talked to a lot of people over the last few months,
passing
and,
an anti-gay marriage
amendment. For this.
Well,
find
thank
me
you
one.
For your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
One. It can't be done. Find me one soldier in the treasonous Iraq war whose life was saved because of an anti-gay marriage amendment. One. Find me anybody anywhere who even dodged a hangnail because of one of these. Find anyone not directly involved in the anti-gay marriage industry. Find anyone who's not directly involved in the anti-gay marriage industry whose economic bottom line has been bettered because gay marriage has been banned. Find me one. Find one child. They always talk about, oh, the children, no. Find one child. One child. Or for that matter, even a kitten or a puppy. Find any life form, from an amoeba up to an elephant. And I realize the irony of that last one, but I'm going for it anyway. From an amoeba up to an elephant, whose life has been bettered in any way. Again, a life not directly connected to the anti-gay marriage industry. Any life that has been bettered by any of these things. They can't do it. It's mind control. It is totalitarianism. It is fascism. It's theocracy. It's Christo-fascism. And yet, I find myself against the pro-gay marriageoids. Why? Because they're a bunch of fucking greedy bastards. And their greed is destroying the ability of transsexuals to exist. Case in point.
We are reeling today.
It's a decision that left people on both sides of the gay marriage debate stunned.
Courts have said that you can get married if you are in prison for murder. But this court says I cannot marry the woman I have loved nearly my entire adult life.
The state Supreme Court upholds Washington's ban on same-sex marriages, surprising even those who agreed with the court.
I'm surprised at their ruling, but I'm terribly grateful and terribly pleased.
Tonight, the ruling, the reaction, and where gay and lesbian couples go from here. Thousands of same-sex couples were hoping for the chance to publicly express their love.
It was a very close vote. The court ruled 5-4 to uphold the ban on gay marriage, surprising people on both sides of this debate. Deborah Feldman tells us how this decision affects same-sex couples. And we start with Robert Mack with more on the ruling itself, a ruling that had the whole country watching. Right, Robert?
Gene, gay marriage supporters were really hoping that Washington State would become the second state after Massachusetts to allow gay marriage. But tonight, the Washington State Supreme Court has shut that door, at least for now, through the court system. Washington's ban on gay marriage is upheld. A scramble at the state Supreme Court as justices release their ruling that in Washington State, marriage remains between a man and a woman.
I'm surprised at their ruling, but I'm terribly grateful and terribly pleased.
Conservative groups admitted today they fully expected to lose. But five justices decided to uphold a ban on gay marriage. Justices Madsen, Alexander, Charles Johnson, and Jim Johnson, and Sanders, a 5-4 ruling, with Justices Fairhurst, Bridge, Owens, and Chambers outnumbered.
It was 5-4. Wow.
Pastors Dave Shull and Peter Ilgenfritz, two of the 38 plaintiffs in the case, read the decision on the court's website. After being together for 20 years, they had hoped to be among the first in line for a marriage license.
Oh, I was very surprised. I was very surprised. I was very saddened. I was very disappointed.
It's a profoundly wrong decision, and that it closes doors and sets up walls.
Today's ruling settles a court battle that started years ago when the 1998 state legislature passed the Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA, limiting marriage to opposite-sex couples. Two lower courts ruled the law violated the state constitution because gay and lesbian couples were denied the privilege and equal right to marriage. But Justice Barbara Madsen, writing the majority opinion, says there is no discrimination or violation of rights. DOMA treats both sexes the same. Neither a man nor a woman can marry a person of the same sex. Madsen writes the legislature was entitled to believe that limiting marriage to opposite-sex couples furthers procreation, essential to survival of the human race, and furthers the well-being of children.
Well, I would hope that it would put a stop to what they are attempting to do, and that is to gain legitimization for their lifestyle.
This is a very sad day, but it is not the last day.
Gay and lesbian couples vowed to keep fighting. On their side was Justice Mary Fairhurst, who described DOMA as unconstitutional and unjust, calling it blatant discrimination. Quote, "There is no rational basis for denying same-sex couples the right to marry. I would hold further that the right to marry the person of one's choice is a fundamental right."
What's important is that children receive unconditional love.
This decision will not stand the test of time. Justice won't allow it to stand the test of time.
What's next? There will be an effort in the state legislature to extend marriage to gay couples, but Representative Ed Murray admits it's not going to pass in the near future.
But we have to begin the discussion with our legislators.
In a way, this decision was quite narrow, looking specifically at whether DOMA violated the state constitution. Several justices suggested that it is up to the legislature and perhaps citizens through initiatives if they wish to change the law of the land. But Murray, a longtime champion of gay rights and marriage, says that votes just aren't there in the legislature, either for gay marriage or civil unions. And that is why today's Supreme Court ruling may set the law in Washington state for quite a long time to come.
All right, Robert, thank you.
Thanks, Robert.
Well, Governor Gregoire reacted to the decision today with a reminder for residents of Washington state that we live in a very diverse state with many opinions on this issue.
The Supreme Court has ruled. We must accept it whether we agree with the decision or not.
She added that she believes marriage is a sacrament between two people and their faith, and that she thinks the state should not interfere with it.
Today's decision is much more than a legal or political issue to countless gay and lesbian families in our state. For them, it has a very real impact on them and their children. King 5's Deborah Feldman spoke with one disappointed couple who explains why it does make a difference whether or not they're legally married. Deborah.
Well, the couple I spoke with is one of eight couples who had sued King County when their request for a marriage license was denied. They've been together for more than a dozen years and say they had really hoped to end the day today with a marriage license in hand.
It makes me very sad.
Today's court ruling was a blow to Janet Helson and Betty Lundquist. The women have been together almost 15 years and are raising their two children, 10-year-old Ty and 5-year-old Zora. They say they'd been optimistic about finally getting the right to marry.
We had our $54 in hand, and we were ready to go into the King County admin building and get a license.
Ready?
Go.
The women say they lead a very normal life and explain that the role of government is a primary reason they want to get married, since there are so many laws that specifically benefit married couples. They range from unquestioned access to spouses in hospital rooms to Social Security benefits or the right to file a joint tax return.
That the really critical things often do catch you by surprise. Someone gets really sick, or a partner gets killed, and someone needs to be in long-term care. And there's just, if you don't have the protection of being married, you just never know when it's going to come up and the ways you're going to be shut out and not recognized.
There's also the emotional issue of how being married would impact their children. They say it was a jarring experience for all of them when they were stopped at U.S. Customs after a recent trip abroad.
When we got to the booth and they said, "You're not a family, you have to fill out two forms." And there we were standing with our children when they said that to us.
Ty says he can't wait till the day his moms are allowed to get married.
On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 and a half.
That's how badly you want to get married.
Janet and Betty say they are also former foster parents and say they find it very ironic that the state will not allow them to marry each other, but did allow them to raise other people's children. Reporting live in Seattle, Deborah Feldman, King 5 News.
Thank you, Deborah. Today's ruling means Massachusetts is the only state where gay marriage is legal. More than 8,000 gay and lesbian couples have now married in that state, but the issue isn't settled there either. State lawmakers are considering an amendment to ban both gay marriage and civil unions. King County Executive Ron Sims said his next step would be to push for civil unions. Already, Two states, Connecticut and Vermont, have legalized same-sex civil unions. California, Hawaii, Maine, New Jersey, and Washington, D.C. offer gay and lesbian couples some legal rights as domestic partners.
Okay, you're wondering. Washington State, earlier this year, enacted a gay rights law that did not discriminate against transgendered people. Okay, so why should I be bitching, against the gay marriage oids in Washington? Well, this I yanked off of one of the TV station's websites from Washington. I forget which one. This is the statement of one of the plaintiff's attorneys in that case. Pay close attention.
This is a very sad day, but it is not the last day. It is just a day. In every struggle for equality and justice, the road is long, it is often perilous, and sometimes the end seems frighteningly distant. The Northwest Women's Law Center, our clients, and our amazing colleagues of the ACLU and Lambda Legal brought this case because we believe in the rule of law. We believe the legal system exists to protect individuals, to protect the powerless, to protect the vulnerable, the disenfranchised, and those who are discriminated against. That is the promise of our Constitution, both state and federal. And today in Washington State, that promise was broken. Because we do respect the rule of law, we acknowledge that for today, for now, the courthouse avenue to justice is foreclosed. But that doesn't mean every end and every avenue is closed. And we will not give up. All it means is that we're taking a deep breath, we're putting our shoulders back, and we are settling into our role as advocates, as attorneys, as activists, and as citizens of our state to ask the legislature and the fair-minded people of Washington to help us achieve marriage equality. We will pursue whatever avenue we have to get that blessed day, as Ron says, when our couples, the 38 couples who so bravely stepped forward, and every lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender couple in this state can have a wedding day when the bells ring and their families celebrate, and we do have equality in the state of Washington. Ron's right. You can delay justice, and sometimes you can delay it for an interminably long time, but you cannot deny it. And I hope we are back here in a very short time celebrating marriages, weddings, and equality.
Bisexual couple? Transgender couple? Did I hear that?
That every lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender couple in this state.
This is why the gay marriage industry is perhaps our number one enemy. And a very dangerous enemy. Because it's sucking us down. The T word had no business being uttered in any way, shape, or form connected with this case. Now, at some point in the future, even without this, perhaps that decision would be used to fuck over trans people. In which case, first and foremost, we need to point out who the enemies are. And the gay marriage industry is right up there with the Christo fascists. Then, and only then, could this be discussed as a trans issue. This particular case in this particular state. We weren't involved in it. As far as I know, none of the potential spouses in this case were trans. I don't know offhand if any trans attorneys were actually consulted on this, any real trans attorneys, that is. Was there any trans input? No, this was not a trans issue. Yet we are being sucked. This is how we are sucked down. It is public perception. Perception that is created. Perhaps this person who said it really didn't mean evil against us. But it's going to be the effect. And that's why a trans program like this, I'd rather be a trans flake than a trans fake, spends a seemingly inordinate amount of time on gay marriage stuff. It's because we are going to be the ultimate loser. Even if they win, we're going to lose. Thank you for tuning in. I'll probably talk about this a little bit more next time, but thank you for tuning in. As always, I am Katrina Rose. This is the 53rd edition of I'd Rather Be a Trans Flake Than a Trans Fake, here on the Trans FM Radio Network.